This show features adults using adult language. You have been warned.
I'm just throwing ideas out there.
I know.
We're just shooting them down, goddammit.
Because I am a anti-idea weapon system. This is Hammercast, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of games, smashing buttons, clicking mice, shuffling cards, and rolling dice. The show is hosted by Todd Chartier and Joseph Hollis. I'm Dwayne Sibley. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, 2015. It's tax day. I'm so sorry, everyone. This is episode number 11. Hammercast is made possible by the Hammer Gaming Community, an adults-only community of gamers from around the world that play all sorts of games together. Games on screens, games on tables, games like Elder Sign, Hearthstone, Dungeons & Dragons, and Grand Theft Auto V. You can check them out at hammergaming.com. So, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are we?
Fuck, it's tax day. I should do that.
Crap. I'm doing pretty good. I finished my taxes a while ago. I didn't have much to do.
Mine are like a million pages and they're hard.
Can't you like hire someone to do that for you?
I'm cheap too.
Well, that explains why you have like 100 pages of taxes to do.
Maybe. No, it was between moving and selling the house, buying the new house, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It just makes for a lot of paperwork.
What have you guys been playing lately?
I've been attempting to play Grand Theft Auto.
How's that working out for you?
Once you get around some of the issues that Joe will talk about later, it's kind of fun. You know, I mean, one of the missions was to go and repo a car. So it's like, cool, I can repo a car. So I go and repo this little white convertible sports car. And when I bring it back to the dealership that had me repo it, you know, the hood was all screwed up. The car was smoking a little bit. And the best part was there was a huge blood stain all over the hood. Right? Like I just totally splattered some chick. And, you know, the guy goes, good job. Thank you. And then gave me some money. So I'm like, hey, this is kind of fun. I can do repo jobs if I get to run people over on a regular basis.
I think you get more money if you bring it back in better condition because you get some sort of extra award.
Yeah, I wasn't so interested in that. That's not where the fun point in the game is for me.
No, you went out of your way to hit cyclists. I was watching the broadcast that he was doing.
Nothing beats the cop I ran over on accident.
Yeah, yeah.
He shouldn't have jumped out of his car right then.
I'm convinced you use these sandbox games as a way to do what you cannot do in real life.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, Joe says to me, he says, oh, you know, on the first multiplayer mission, the other people are probably going to run in and just finish the whole thing before you even get there. And I'm like, okay. So I get in the car, I'm riding along with these three other people, and we jump out of the car and I run over to where I'm supposed to be. And the first thing I do is shoot the dude. Like, I don't even think, bang, shoot him right in the head, done. And then he's squirming around on the ground. So I run over and put three more in him. And then I broke the whole mission. So then the drug dealer just takes off and starts running across the city. Everyone else in my crew leaves and I go chasing after him for like the next 40 minutes trying to chase this guy down. And then I finally corner him, box him in a gas station, and I just get out of my car and just shoot the dude right in his car because he doesn't get out. And then I went back and finished the mission. But I guess I have ways of breaking things in ways other people don't think of.
Well, I'm watching it and he gets out and, you know, the drug dealer guy's standing there. He like lifts up his arms like he's ready to talk. And the first thing Todd does is pull up his gun and shoot the guy 8 times. I was like, Todd?
You know, the worst part was, Joe was upstairs and he was watching because I was Steam broadcasting. And the worst part was I was cackling like an idiot, right? I was just, it was actually a lot of fun last night when I was shooting people and running people over. And I like to say that I'm a really good driver with the keyboard. Which one?
Yeah.
So last episode, we had Jeff Gretz here filling in for you, Todd. And he mentioned that he was running a D&D campaign where everybody in the party is evil. And he says it's like running a party for 4.5 Todds. And now our listeners know why he said that.
Oh, I'm touched. I'm touched that he would say that. Oh, that's sweet.
You did play the tiefling.
It's true. So other than that, you know, I went through and tested a few pre-sale, what do they call them? Pre-whatever games that I had. Stonehearth and Craft the World and a couple others I had. And they're all buggy as shit. I also tried Asteroids Outpost. That wasn't all that much better. That game was actually boring as shit.
Is it mostly ass and not so much droids?
Yeah, I didn't see any droids. I didn't see any droids at all. We ain't found shit. But, you know, there's that. What about you, Joe?
I was playing a bunch of Grand Theft Auto Online a couple days ago before you were playing. We still have to wait for you to finish the tutorial inside the online before we can play together, but you're almost done with that, assuming you can stay focused long enough to finish the mission.
Right. On a side point real quick, how long did it take you to download it, Joe?
About an hour, maybe a little more.
I think it was like 90 minutes. How's your download going there, Dwayne?
We're not going to talk about that. Okay. I expect to be able to play sometime this weekend.
Oh, well, that'd be nice. Maybe they'll have... No, never mind. I'm not going to say it. Joe can talk about it later.
Yeah, maybe they'll have fixed the bugs by then, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Right. I was playing with Tepeach, who is in our WoW guild, but he hasn't logged in because he unsubscribed.
Does he listen to the show?
I don't know. I'll mention it to him, though.
Is he actually in the guild if he doesn't actually pay for the game? How does that work?
He's on the roster.
He's been around for a long time, since near the beginning.
So. When mastodons roam the earth.
Yes. I haven't been around that long.
I'm still playing Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate on 3DS with my family, and it's still a lot of fun. It's been consuming most of my screen time that isn't dedicated to work. And we've also been playing a new card game. Well, actually, I don't know how new it is, but it's new to us. It's a card game based on the Resistance game that was featured on Tabletop some time ago, and it's called Coup, and it's basically built around just bluffing your ass off in an effort to get everybody else out of the game. And I have learned that I am not nearly as good a liar as I thought I was, and that my 10-year-old is a much better liar than any of us.
Yeah, he can probably already sign your signature by now. So
yeah, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
I tried that when I was a kid.
Signing your own. So really? Oh, I had my dad's signature down perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, but how
old were you? I copied it down perfectly, but my dad's handwriting is so messy.
Oh, that he never signs the same way twice?
No, his handwriting is so messy that the teacher had thought that I must have done it. So if my dad really had signed it, I still would have been questioned about it, but it wouldn't have been a lie.
You know what a key to the fake signature is? Just do it fast.
Yeah.
Just do it fast. If you do it slow, it's obvious that you are trying to copy something. But if you do it fast, then it's done.
I'm going to tell our listeners the same thing I tell my 10-year-old. Don't listen to anything Uncle Todd says.
Oh.
But you know what my punishment was from my dad? To sign his name and to repeatedly sign his name until I could actually do it without getting caught.
Well, that has value.
Wow.
I mean, not value as a father, but I mean, it had plenty of value for you.
Well, he said, if you're gonna forge my name, but it wasn't like he wanted me to do it. It was a...
That's kind of exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, kind of.
I'm just explaining it wrong. It was like, if you want to write my name, then write my name 100 times or something.
I don't remember. It's like Bart Simpson writing shit on the board.
Right, yeah.
All right, yeah. Then. Well, let's head on over to our stories of the week after that really interesting jaunt through everything. Joe, you're first up this week. What's your story of the week?
It relates to what we've been playing lately, me and Todd. Grand Theft Auto, the PC release, came out a couple days ago for most people. The official day was yesterday. Some people are still downloading. But it came out with some serious issues about launching the game. The official problem that Rockstar has come out with is that if you have special characters in your Windows name, you'll have trouble downloading and launching the game. So you have to actually create another username on your Windows account in order to launch the game. But the problem that me, Todd, my brother, have run into is the game, the launcher crashes as soon as you launch the game. And the only workaround that I've found for it is disabling our video drivers and re-enabling them as you launch the launcher, which is a pain in the ass, to say the least.
Serious pain in the ass.
But it gets the game running. So we're just waiting for them to fix this issue so that we don't have to do such a weird workaround to get the game running. But once the game's running, it runs fine. I'm not having any issues playing.
I was actually getting some video lag, but I don't know if it was because I was broadcasting to you or not.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember I actually had a couple spots where it lagged a little bit and then it cleared up, and I'm not sure what the issue was.
Yeah, it was when I was driving, that was going through a tunnel or under a bridge or something. So I don't know if it was some weird lighting occlusion stuff or what the deal was.
Yeah, it was when it turned nighttime for me, so it could be the lighting was kicking in and it lagged my game for a little bit. But yeah, these issues, you know, they have a lot of people upset because a lot of people are having trouble launching the game. So, you know, I've been seeing a lot of people say that they want a refund on the game because it doesn't work right away, but I'm used to games being really buggy as soon as they come out. So I guess I'm just
we're jaded,
desensitized to the whole major issues on launch thing, but yeah, I really hope they get it fixed quick so that I can start playing without having to disable all my video drivers.
Or leave the launcher running forever.
Yeah, I've got the launcher running right now, because if you force quit the game, the launcher pops back up.
Yeah, so it seems like it's got something to do with the way Grand Theft Auto detects your video drivers or something. Be interesting to know. Oh, no, because we tried it before we updated our drivers, right? So it was definitely with the old drivers, too. So I have no idea. It is obnoxious. It'll probably keep me from playing on a regular basis because of it, because it's obnoxious and it screws with all my icons and like all my shit's moved around now and I'm pissed off. I'm just angry in general. But
it moves everything to your first monitor.
Yeah, is not my main monitor. Go on.
Two things here. First, it'll be really interesting to see if they handle this better than Ubisoft handled the launch day issues with Assassin's Creed Unity, which took them several weeks to finally sort out to a point where the game was playable. And second, I don't know, man. I could probably go down to Best Buy and pick up a PS4 copy of this, pop it in, and be playing. I mean, yeah, I love PC gaming.
Controller.
Yeah, I know. You don't dig controllers. But I don't understand where all of these issues are coming from when they've obviously had a, you know, mostly complete and bug-free binary elsewhere. What's the dealio?
Well, do they have it for Xbox One, out of curiosity?
Yeah, Xbox One and PS4, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure. So, I mean, they've obviously already got builds for DirectX, so I don't know.
Well, the issue here revolves around the launcher, because once you get past the launcher, you can play the game.
That's true.
So the launcher is the first boss of GTA 5.
Yes, exactly.
If you could just bypass the launcher, I think you could play the game just fine.
You know, I would consider playing with a controller on a PlayStation. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the concept of consoles because the hardware is all the same. You don't have to worry about your shit being better or worse than someone else's stuff and all that kind of crap. You know, I like that. But if I'm just, you know, I don't know if I don't have the fine motor control on my thumbs or what the deal is. But like aiming a gun in with a controller sucks. Yep. I'm not good at it.
I'm convinced your thumbs are broken.
Oh, my thumbs are good. They do space bar all the time really well.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
So you've got gross motor control down.
Yeah. Yeah, with how much I type.
Well, with the PC release comes, you know, moddable support eventually. Eventually somebody will have some mods for the game.
Right.
And the map creator is probably a lot easier to use with a mouse and keyboard than a controller.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
On the map creator, I mean, can you like create missions and stuff?
Yes.
So someone can make a whole city and just make all their own missions and their own story in it and everything.
Yep.
You could make GTA Seattle if you wanted to put the work in.
Yeah, it would just always be raining.
People are already doing videos because there's another editor that lets you make, like, take characters, have them move the way that you want. You can put in sound effects and you could create little movies inside the game.
Yeah, well, I remember they've been doing that for a while now, right? Since like GTA 2 or 3.
No, this is new. You used to be able to capture a clip in the game, but this is the first time they've had you so that you can make your own movies.
Yeah, you can basically make your own cinematics, kind of like the tool that they let Ian Chisholm use when he made the Clear Sky series in Eve.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I watched Clear Skies 3 or not.
I'm pretty sure you did, because I think I was there.
Yeah. If anyone hasn't seen it, Clear Skies, done in the Eve universe, it's probably the most amazing, what do you call that? Is that Machinima?
Yes.
Ever done, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's really, really good. We'll go ahead and link that up, along with the Rockstar Editor, in our show notes. And you can find our show notes this week at hammergaming.com/hammercast/11 for episode 11. It'll have all the links to everything we're talking about here and allow you to listen to the show and subscribe if you decide you like us. Todd, what's your story of the week?
So the ESA... you know, we all know and love the ESA, although I'm trying to bring up the article again because, of course, I closed it. The Electronic,
Software Association.
Yep. So they have now said that anything you do to a piece of software to make it run past when the original developer designed it to run. So like, let's say Star Wars Galaxies and they take the servers down, so then someone else puts up another server or mods the game so it's single player, that kind of thing. Anything like that is considered hacking and therefore illegal. So I think that's kind of bullshit. You know, I don't really, you know, last year the Internet Archive has been putting together, you know, the historical software collection of games and programs and all this kind of stuff. And they have 2,400 DOS games, 9,900 classic coin-operated games. And all of those at this point would have to be modded in some way in order to run. And the ESA says, nope, hacking, fuck you. And, you know, I just think that's total crap. I mean, if I bought a piece of software and all of a sudden the developer shuts down their authentication server so I can't launch my software anymore, you know, that seems unfair to me. You know, I spent my money. I bought my software. Fuck you. I'm going to do what I want with it. And that doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to, you know, copy it and give it away to everybody in the world. But if I modify a piece of software so that I can still use it, I don't think that's hacking. I mean, I guess it's considered hacking, but it shouldn't be considered illegal if I'm doing something to make my own software run. You know, I guess that's my opinion on that.
Now, I agree with you, but for the sake of argument, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. You're not really buying the software. You're buying a license to make use of the software. And in most of those licenses, there's a clause that says we can turn off your playability, your functionality, whenever we decide to. You know, I think it's scummy that they're doing this, but they do kind of have their asses covered, which also sucks.
I don't know. I'd like someone to show me the EULA on Zork 1 that says that they can turn off access to your game after you bought it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that standalone titles, like places like the Archive Team and the American Classic Arcade Museum up in New Hampshire, have been doing all sorts of stuff to preserve video games and video game history. And, you know, with a lot of the earlier games, a lot of the standalone games, it's simply a matter of, you know, pulling the ROM from the cartridge and keeping it in a safe place so that you can run it in whatever emulator exists. And I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is these online games that require some sort of remote server component to work. You know, your World of Warcraft, your Star Wars Galaxies, your modern sports games that have to log into the server to perpetuate your career file. You know, we recently had a big server shutdown brouhaha with, what was it, NBA 2K14, where they shut down the servers for maintenance and a whole bunch of people's career files got completely borked. But yeah, it's these games with the online component. Eventually, these online components go away. One day, Blizzard is going to turn off the servers for Diablo 2, Diablo 3, World of Warcraft, etc. And those games are going to go, or those games as we know them are going to go away. And where I agree with you is that somebody should be able to reverse engineer the server protocol and be able to like run a WoW server or a Diablo server or a NBA 2K14 server after the company that owns it expresses disinterest in doing it themselves.
Well, I mean, I think that there's two sides of this, right? A game, I want to make sure we're comparing the right things, because a game like World of Warcraft, where, you know, it's understood that it's an online game, you know, I think that the risk of the server shutting down is a risk you assume by buying the game. And that, to me, should be known or should be assumed, you know, because it's that type of game. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yep.
Whereas a game like, let's say, Diablo 2, which I don't think is obviously apparent that it's online other than it's multiplayer. You know, a game like that should not disable itself if it can't talk to the servers. If the servers are down or they're going to shut the servers down permanently, they should just fire off something that disables the authentication in the code or some crap like that.
So and patch then, the game before you turn the servers off.
Yeah, and leave that patch available, you know, forever or whatever. Or just, you know, you put it out in the internet, someone will save it somewhere and it'll be fine. But, you know, I think that that should be the thing that the developers do as a, you know, kind of a good guy approach to software development.
There should be a way. Well, there should be a way in games like that where they make it so that when you boot up Diablo, for example, and you want to play a game with your friends, then it hosts the server on whoever the host's computer is. Kind of the way that I remember a lot of games running, where if you played a Team Fortress game, whoever the host was, that was the person that was, you know, hosting the game, and it hosted from their connection. So if you had a bad host with a really crappy dial-up connection like I had, then everybody complained because they were getting really bad ping.
Yeah.
So I think there should be a way to do that with things like Diablo, where if they ever close down their servers for good, then whoever's hosting the game is hosting the server for their friends to play together. If that makes sense.
It does. My interest in this is that, you know, not so much the ability to keep playing a game I may have bought ages ago, although that is a compelling interest for me. But my primary interest in this is history, you know, the archival value of the history of video games. You know, sure, you buy into an MMO with the expectation that one day it may shut down. I mean, I think, didn't the three of us all buy into Tabula Rasa and that game went away like 2 years later?
Yeah, we blame you for that one.
Hey, on paper, it was going to be good. I should have realized that, you know, Garriott lost his mojo long ago. But
yeah,
back to the topic, you know, I think that there is value in being able to take these games that are primarily online, if not completely online, and replicate their functionality so that somebody 25 years from now, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when they're studying the history of video games, because it's an actual academic topic by that point, it would suck if these online-only games disappeared. You know, it would suck if you could find the binary for the World of Warcraft client, but because the servers, you know, shut down 80 years ago, then how are you going to be able to see what it was like? Aside from, you know, if you can still have YouTube around, you can see videos of what it was like for other people to play it, but you should be able to just, you know, with a little bit of work, get it running and play yourself so you can see what, you know, people from generations ago were on about. You know, everything was written down until our generation, and now that everything's digital, we run the risk of letting things disappear instead of becoming a part of history.
Now, I remember a sandbox program that would run World of Warcraft by itself, Are things like that still around, or has Blizzard kind of clamped down on those kind of things?
Well, there's huge WoW emulators out there.
Like still private servers?
Yeah, they're going strong.
But I also remember a program that would let you run the game by itself. So you'd be by yourself and you'd have access to all the admin commands to spawn in whatever you wanted and everything. I don't know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I don't know either.
Like a single player World of Warcraft. I would get bored after a while, but that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's a big place with nothing in it. No one in it.
It doesn't have NPCs or anything. You could spawn in. The thing that these emulators are all doing is they're replacing all of the NPCs and everything.
Speaking of World of Warcraft, my story of the week regards the upcoming World of Warcraft patch, patch 6.2, which just hit the public test realms this week. The biggest thing I wanted to talk about was this feature they're debuting called Time Walking. They're basically going to let you go back and run old content, old dungeons, like the old five-man dungeons from Burning Crusade, Wrath of the Lich King, and Cataclysm, and you'll be able to run them with your current gear and your current abilities, but you will be scaled down to be level appropriate for the dungeon. So they're going to be hard all over again. And as a reward, you will get current tier versions of the old gear that dropped in those dungeons. So instead of going back and running an instance so you can transmog your current sword into a sword that you thought looked much cooler, you can actually go back via time walking and get a level 100 version of that sword, which is kind of neat and an interesting way for them to recycle the old content. What do you guys think?
Personally, I think it's about time. I've been wanting some sort of way to replay the old content scaled to our level for a long time. I remember the idea of scaling your own level to play with other people's alts and stuff has always been around. So this will be a good way for, like, I have a level 50 alt. Does anybody have anybody around that level? No. Well, now you can group up with them and do the same dungeon together, and it'll just scale your level down to theirs. Yeah. Because from what I read, anybody in a wide range of levels can all group up together and run the same dungeons now, and I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, anyone for whom the dungeon would be level appropriate can actually queue up, and the rest of the party, if they are over-leveled, would be scaled down, which is kind of neat.
Yeah,
that's
like
interesting.
It.
Yeah, I didn't read about that. I didn't read your story this week. That's kind of cool. I mean, how is it going to take into effect gear and gear score and all that kind of BS?
I assume they're going to use the same algorithms that they use for the what's the thing with the medals? Joe, help me out here.
Medals, like the badges of valor.
No, the trial that you have to get through to be able to queue for heroics. What's it called?
Oh, yeah.
You have to get the silver medal.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it. Trials. I can't remember the name of it either.
We'll look it up and put it in the show notes. But they use a system there to scale your gear down to some sort of baseline. So, for example, when you are queuing for that particular scenario to try and get your bronze, silver, or gold medal, your skills and the damage that you do is scaled down to, I think, an average item level of 615.
Yeah.
So they will probably do the same thing for these time-walking instances where they will just scale down your stuff so that you are temporarily level appropriate.
So
that's interesting.
The question I have is, so the website posted all the different dungeons they were going to test on the PTR. Are those the only dungeons that are going to be available, or are they doing it game wide so you'll be able to do it for everything and they're just testing those at different level ranges?
Yeah, that's something we're just going to have to wait to find out.
Yeah.
A couple other interesting things from the patch notes. They're rolling out what they're calling Mythic Dungeons, which are basically really hard, challenging versions of the current five-mans. And you'll be able to go in there and get gear equivalent to what you would normally get out of a raid. So this presents a alternate progression path for folks who can't get 10 or more friends together and go tackle a raid. So that'll be interesting. And it'll also be a nice way for folks who are raiding to shore up their gear outside of their raiding schedule. Because, you know, the random number generator sometimes decides it hates you and you're not going to get any gear from the raid this week. So this will be a nice way to have an extra chance.
I don't know. What was a dungeon we always hated leveling?
I don't know. There's so many. Like regular dungeons or raids?
Like a dungeon, like imagine Mythic Blackrock Depths.
Oh, God.
Mythic Ubers.
Like if the time walking had the mythic option too, that would be interesting.
Yeah,
that
any of those Blackrock instances, it would take like hours again, like six.
They were terrible the first time around before they were ever revamped.
I really thought that BRD was actually a really well staged dungeon. I thought that the set was put together very well.
I like the set pieces. I like the design of it. I just don't like that it was all one dungeon.
Yeah, it could have been. Well, I think we're just going to spoil the shorter ones, but yeah.
Well, the LFR, the LFG, Looking for Group thing, did split it up. So there was a set number of bosses you had to kill, and then the dungeon was done. Right. And then once you leveled a little bit more, you could get different sections that you could queue for.
Which was nice.
Yeah.
But that was also nearly like 6 years after that particular dungeon debuted. So a little bit of Johnny come lately in that case. Also, last thing from the 6.2 patch notes, apparently we're going to be able to add a shipyard to our garrison and build ships and send them out on missions just like followers. You can now call me Admiral Dwayne
because it's just a matter of time before they start expanding the garrison. I mean, that is going to be a huge portion of the game over the next couple of years.
I plan to enjoy this because boats.
So yeah. What do you need to? Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the detail of "quote unquote" building a ship, right? And if it's just gathering shit and boop, it pops up.
Yeah, if we want to know more, we're just going to have to hop onto the PTR and find out. Otherwise, we'll just have to wait until 6.2 goes live.
Was there an estimated drop date?
No, because it just hit the PTR, and from my reading of the patch notes, it sounds like this is somewhat preliminary, and they're still working on a whole bunch of stuff. So we'll see. I know personally the monk community is in an uproar over the patch notes because they got nerfed hard. So
I thought Blizzard stopped caring about the community 4 or 5 years ago.
Perhaps.
We'll see what happens. Joe, your homework is to get yourself on the PTR and report back.
Yeah, I have the PTR installed still, so as soon as it updates, I can probably go in and check some stuff out.
And what'll that be for you? 3 minutes?
Yeah,
maybe 5.
I hate you guys so much.
It's okay. We still love you.
No, you don't.
Right.
Our focus target for this week is a fun one, or at least I hope it's going to be a fun one. Guilty pleasure games. These are the video games or tabletop games, if there's something that qualifies, that you love to play, and you could play for hours on end, but you really hate admitting to anyone that you play it. So how about you, Todd, since you volunteered?
Oh, man. So I'm a complete, utter junkie for mindless simulators. Things like Farming Sim and Jail Sim and Hotel Sim and Airport Sim and Sim. I don't know. I'm Game Developer Simulator. Looking at my list here. I have Prison Architect, Railroad Tycoon 3. Oh my God, I spent so much time playing that game. Tropico, Love City Builders, Caesar, Pharaoh, all those games. I own every Tropico here. Train Simulator 2015, I got that. Those types of games, I don't know what it is about them, but they're just like a complete escape from life, where you get to play a little bit of God and you know, run other people's lives, sometimes shortly lived lives. But so maybe that's why I like GTA, because you kind of have a lot of control over, you know, you can kill people at will. Interesting.
Well, you can in the real world too. our circumstances or our consequences tend to be a bit more severe and immediate.
Yeah, I mean, I like the, you know, other games, like obviously Mass Effect 2, which is my most favorite game of all time.
But you're not embarrassed about talking about Mass Effect
2. No. But that's, to me, Mass Effect 2 is an escape from the games I usually play, just like GTA 5 is an escape from the games I usually play. If I'm just going to sit down and no one else is around to play a multiplayer game and I have nothing to do, I always fall back to some sort of city builder like Tropico or something like that, or a mindless simulator.
Speaking of city builders, have you had any time to try out cities yet? I know you bought it.
You could just stop at "Have you had any time?" Because,
okay. Right?
No, I do a lot of traveling for work. Doesn't look like it's going to let up at all. And I have limited time to play games these days. But summer's coming, and maybe it'll slow down or not.
Here's hoping. Joe, what's your guilty pleasure game or games? Well, this doesn't have to be one.
I love simulators, so I agree with Todd on that one. I was trying to think of something else to say besides, you know, Minecraft, where I've spent tons of hours playing that. So I thought of a game that I used to play a lot and would still probably play given the chance, and that's probably the Dynasty Warriors series, where I guess I could sum it up into any game where there's just large armies and you just run around killing tons of soldiers all with one swing of the button, and those kind of mindless, just running around, murdering everything kind of games. I could just sit there and play one of those games for hours, because it's just really fun to see tons of carnage. So I guess, you know, that could translate into why I like Grand Theft Auto 2, because I could just mow through crowds of innocent people, and I just find joy in those kinds of games. And I guess that would qualify as a guilty pleasure.
All right. That's fair.
So Joe likes mass murder. Noted.
At what point does each Dynasty Warriors game simply become the last Dynasty Warriors game?
They're exactly the same game every single time, but I still enjoy them.
but better looking. It's definitely better looking every time. I had to stop buying after like my third, because I just got tired of giving them $50 for the same game every time.
And I like the pole arms, because problem. You can hit the most amount of people at the same time.
Ah, yes. Who was your character? What guy did you like to be the most?
I can't even remember the name. It was one of the green faction guys.
Have a ridiculously big beard? Was it Guan Yu?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Okay. You and I are of the same mind then, because Guan Yu was a badass.
Oddly enough, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Chinese history. Open a book. I love. Yeah, if you don't have time for games, why would you have time for books?
No, I read all the time because I'm always on a freaking plane.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways,
go on.
I love ridiculously technical shit, which you'd think would be weird because I do ridiculously technical shit for work. So why would I still do it when I'm playing? But it's I'm broken in that way. It's a weird thing about me. So I found a couple years back the most ridiculously technical sim that I've ever found, and it's Kerbal Space Program. I've sunk probably about 1300 hours over the last couple of years into this game, and I don't see that number going, or that number slowing anytime soon. It's basically what I fire up when there's nothing else to play and there's no one around to play with. And I just love making rockets, making airplanes, blowing things up by accident on occasion and on purpose on occasion. And it's not a guilty pleasure in that I'm embarrassed to admit that I like it. it's a guilty pleasure in that I'm embarrassed to tell people how much I've played it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's...
Weren't you in the top 10 for the most hours played for a while?
On Raptor for a while, but I've probably fallen by the wayside because, you know, once I started working with you, Todd, I had a lot less time to play, so my rate of gain has gone down. But, yeah, there was a period there where I played Kerbal Space Program a lot.
So I went and looked up on your Steam profile how much you've spent.
Yeah.
1,191 hours on record.
I believe it. And that doesn't count the times where I've played it with Steam offline.
Right. So, yeah, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, I like building rockets. I guess one of the other guilty parts of the guilty pleasure facet of this game is that when I get excited about it, I start talking about, you know, orbital mechanics and lots of math, and that's usually when people's eyes glaze over and stop listening. And that's one of the reasons why I don't usually bring up the fact that I'm such a huge Kerbal Space Program fan. But I will put it as a link in the show notes to see if anybody else is interested in Kerbal Space Program. So, listeners, this week we're giving away a copy of the Humble Origin Bundle 2, including Dragon Age 1 and 2, Dead Space 2, Mass Effect 2, and a handful of other great EA games. To get your chance to win, we want to know about your guilty pleasure game and why you feel so guilty about loving it. The best story, as judged by the three of us, will receive a code for the Humble Origin Bundle 2. Send an email with your story to hammercast@hammergaming.com. That's hammercast@hammergaming.com. And we look forward to reading about your guilty pleasures and awarding one of you a copy of the Humble Origin Bundle 2. We're going to move right on to the Colosseum. Every week, we choose a rapid-fire list of news from the previous 7 days and present them to our twin emperors, Joe and Todd, for judgment. This week in the Colosseum, we've got YouTube. Subscriptions are coming to YouTube. YouTube and parent company Google have confirmed that a monthly subscription option is coming to the online video service that will allow subscribers to bypass advertising that normally bookends video playback. The plan includes sharing revenue with content creators, although Google would not give any details on sharing arrangements as they are still under discussion. You're on YouTube a bit, Joe, so how do you feel about this?
I'm not sure, because it makes me think of the possibilities of what will happen if you're not subscribed. So I'm going to go ahead.
Get worse?
Well, I think that content creators might start to put more ads because you're allowed to put multiple different spots where you can put ads. You can put it at the beginning, you can put a mid-roll ad, you can put an end. And I'm wondering if people are going to start adding more ads to their videos because they know that people can just bypass them by subscribing. So they might not feel as guilty about it because people will be skipping those ads anyway. So they might as well, for the people who haven't subscribed, get the most ad revenue out of them that they can. So I'm not sure. I don't know what YouTube's going to try to do about people who run ad blockers anyway. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I'll give it a tentative thumbs down, I guess, because I'm not sure how that's going to affect YouTube in general and what content creators do about their ads.
How about you, Emperor Todd?
So, you know, I mean, I don't know, some of our listeners may not be old enough to remember this, but back in the old days when cable was first pitched to us, you know, I was pretty young at the time, but I remember the stories that my dad told me. And when cable was first pitched to us, it was in lieu of commercials, you would pay for service. Everyone's like, well, why would I pay for something that comes over the air? You know, and the deal was, well, the picture would be better and there'd be no commercials. And in the beginning, that was true. But now anybody who has a cable subscription and watches TV knows that ain't the fucking case anymore. Because now, you know, you have 42 to 44 minutes of programming and 15 minutes to 16 minutes of commercials for every 1 hour show. and that kind of sucks. So I just see this as being the same thing. They're going to start with this, and then they're going to just start slowly adding certain commercials back in. You know, they'll say, they'll come up with some cockamamie reason, and then your commercials will be back, and we'll be exactly where we are today. And the people who don't pay, you're going to watch 50 minutes of commercials and 10 minutes of content. Maybe not that bad, but it'll be bad, like Joe said. That's my opinion. So fuck you and thumbs down.
Okay.
I mean, Hulu never added. Like, you can subscribe to it, but that doesn't reduce the commercials that you get.
But wasn't that their pitch in the beginning?
No. I think their pitch in the beginning was watch it on your mobile devices.
Oh, that's right. That was one of their pitches. Well, fuck them and thumbs down on them, too. I don't personally pay for Hulu. I think the service is shit. You know, I pay for cable. Maybe it's okay for people who don't have cable. But I have cable. Go on.
That wasn't even an option to give a thumbs down for, and you're giving it a thumbs down.
Damn right.
It's thumbs down for everyone today.
Yeah. I've been up since early, and I was up since late last night.
Next up in the Coliseum, we have the WoW token, which is the World of Warcraft item purchasable for $20 and redeemable for a month of game time, has successfully launched as of last week, and it lost a full quarter of its initial value within the first 24 hours. The currency debuted at a fixed price of 30,000 in-game gold, or an exchange rate of about 1,500 gold per dollar. By the next day, the price had dropped to 22,405 for a loss of 25.4%. Market activity since then has become interestingly cyclical, with the prices dropping to their lowest every morning and rising by as much as 3,000 gold each evening during prime time before plunging back overnight. Via black market sales online, $20 will buy you about 40,000 gold, which means that one could spend a little over $20 on gold farmers, buy 2 WoW tokens, and get your game time for $10 a month, which is $5 a month less than Blizzard charges legitimately. Will Blizzard step in to adjust the market to make continued black market participation less attractive? What do you think, Emperor Todd?
I think the whole experiment's a failure, if you want my opinion. I think that the price is just going to continue to drop over the next 6 months. There is not enough demand in the marketplace for that kind of gold to sustain that market. That's my opinion. So I think it's, you know, it's thumbs down, because it's just, the whole thing is hilarious to me. You know, I think they tried to do kind of like a quick money grab, like Eve and a couple other games have done. You know, they probably made a few bucks on it, but like you said, at this point you can buy tokens cheaper than you can buy subscriptions for, you know, which was always Eve's concern, but you know, they worked on it, and they have, you know, things that happen in that game that consume 5,000 tokens worth of 5,000 plex worth of credits. And there's nothing in WoW to drive that kind of market.
Yeah. The most expensive thing in WoW right now would cost 5 tokens worth of gold right now, or about $100 in real world money.
Right. And there's guilds, like, you know, there's the big guilds out there like Test and stuff, who will go out and do fundraisers and buy 500 plex to, you know, build a bunch of titans to go fight a big war. You know, there's just nothing in WoW to drive that. And, you know, I think it's going to be fun to watch over the next few months. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'd love to be wrong. But I think if I'm wrong, then WoW has, then Blizzard has stepped in to try to do some damage control. And if they do that, then that means the tokens won't be selling, in my opinion, just to the desperate.
How about you, Emperor Joe?
I'm going to give it a thumbs down, too. I went and checked it this morning. It was down to just above 21,000 gold. And when I heard about the tokens and trying to beat the gold farmers at their own game, I thought of a price at least 40,000 to 50,000 gold. For your tokens. And at 20,000 gold, it just doesn't seem worth it to me. And I am afraid, I do think that the tokens are just going to keep dropping in price. On the flip side of it, it could just be the rush. Everybody bought a ton of them, and there's way more on the market right now than people are actually willing to buy. But when I went and looked at other prices and saw, you know, average item level epic bracers selling for 40,000 gold, and then these WoW tokens that give you a month of subscription at 20,000 gold, it just seems broken right now. And like Todd said, they need to, Blizzard needs to figure out something that they can do about it, or just remove them completely because it's a failed experiment.
Well, I don't think they're going to remove them. I think they're just going to set a bottom line value on them. Like, they can't go below X dollars or X gold, you know, that sort of thing.
I'm interested in waiting and seeing if the market corrects itself over time, because I do believe there is a rush. And the one of the things that kind of mystifies me a little bit is that we're missing one crucial metric that we would get if this were an actual stock market, or that we would get in EVE's market, but we're not getting out of Blizzard. We can go to sites like wowtoken.info and track historical prices, but we have absolutely no data on sales volume. You know, we need that other axis to be able to really tell what the hell's going on here. But after 1 week, I don't think I could call it a failure, but I will be watching this with great interest, because if Blizzard stays hands off, this could crash and burn and really suck for them and for players.
Yeah, I mean, they can't stay hands off. That's the problem. They're going to put themselves in a position where it's going to be a loss leader, and they're going to have to step in and set some caps on it. And if they don't, then it's going to destroy their monthly income revenue, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So it's going to get to a point where it's going to be, you know, not worth the gold, and no one will buy them. So in the end, it's still a failure.
Right.
First point. Only for the desperate.
Next up, we have a little thing about the upcoming BBC drama based on the development of Rockstar's original Grand Theft Auto. Casting choices continue to be revealed. Last week, we talked about how Daniel Radcliffe is being cast as Rockstar founder Sam Houser, and now we've heard that Bill Paxton will be the disbarred attorney and anti-video game advocate Jack Thompson.
I haven't heard that name in ages.
Yeah. That's the best thing I can think of. We haven't heard Jack Thompson's name in ages. That is victory, folks. In a piece this week by Games Radar, a number of the original DMA developers, DMA being the original developers behind Grand Theft Auto, they went on to become Rockstar North and continue to work on Rockstar titles. But some of the original DMA developers expressed skepticism about the accuracy of the BBC docudrama, which is based on a book called Jacked, The Outlaw Story of Grand Theft Auto. Their fear is that their part in creating the series' first two games will be glossed over, and the drama narrative will skip straight to GTA 3's blockbuster release and the resulting controversy, and thus bear little resemblance to what actually occurred. This kind of echoes the concerns that you were having, so what do you have to say about this, Emperor Joe?
I did kind of predict that they would go straight to... I think the general consensus was is they were going to jump to Grand Theft Auto 3 first and kind of skip the first two, because those never really got a ton of media coverage as far as I can remember.
Except in Australia. Wasn't GTA and GTA 2 banned in Australia? Because they ban everything that's remotely violent?
I thought that was Hungary.
No, that's you're thinking about Turkey and Minecraft.
Oh, Turkey.
You're just hungry for Turkey.
Right. I just had pizza.
Was it turkey pizza?
No.
Okay. Anyway, I'm sorry, Joe. Go on.
I'm not sure. I can't really give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. It's just Rockstar predicting what the story is going to be about, I suppose.
Or what it's not going to be about.
Or what it's not going to be about. I mean, I would guess that they're going to focus more on Grand Theft Auto 3 and up, as opposed to the first two.
Yeah, because that's where Jack Thompson gets involved.
Right.
How about you, Emperor Todd?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. Up until recently, I haven't really been a Rockstar GTA fan. I've never put any real time into any of the ones in the past. I bought this one kind of on a whim, and that and everybody else I knew was buying it, and it has some multiplayer stuff in it, so I'm kind of a sucker for that. So we'll see. You know, I'm going to kind of reserve judgment on it for now. I mean, I was like a good movie. I think Daniel Radcliffe has great range in his acting abilities. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe it might be interesting. But as for Jack Thompson, fuck you, buddy. Just fuck you.
No, he fucked himself. He got disbarred. Nobody listens to him. You know, I'm not even going to spare any disdain for him at this point because he got his just desserts.
Now, this is the guy that sparred with Mike Krahulik at Penny Arcade, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I thought so. He didn't win that.
He basically directly led to the creation of Child's Play, which is probably the greatest thing he's ever been even partially responsible for.
You know, as a kick in the balls, I would give him credit, like put him somewhere in the credits for Child's Play, saying thank you, Jack Thompson, for being such a ball licker that we had to make this amazingly awesome thing.
I'm pretty sure that may have crossed their mind at some point.
Oh, I'm sure it did. And I'm sure Koo put a stop to that, but it should be there. Dude, they should do it on a white page with white text. So you have to like highlight it to see it. Magic.
View source.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. View source.
A 4K TV or monitor might be in your future sooner than you think. Vizio, the budget-friendly TV manufacturer, has debuted a new line of 4K class television displays, starting at only $600 for a 43-inch model. 4K TV content is very limited right now, so there really isn't much out there to watch on one of these sets if you put it in your living room. However, PC gaming is not suffering for content, and if you've got the video hardware to support it, perhaps attaching one of these bad boys to your computer for some high-res GTA or Warcraft or Kerbal Space Program might be worthwhile. What do you think about that, Emperor Todd?
You know, I heard about this a while ago. I heard that Vizio was working on $600 4K TVs. They did it by making their own backlighting system. They're not buying someone else's. That's really expensive. So they were able to do this at a significantly discounted price compared to their competitors. So I think that's interesting that they're doing that. I really don't, you know, I don't think there's been any reviews yet as to the quality, but $600 for 43 inches of 4K. I mean, I don't know. That seems like a pretty good deal to me. If the reviews even come out, you know, in the 75% range as people liking it, I will greatly consider that upgrade. And, you know, which gets really expensive for me because I use a small form factor computer, an Alienware X51 or whatever the hell it's called. And this is my upgrade year. So I've had this computer for 3 or 4 years now, and it's time for a new one. So I need to decide if I'm going to stay with small form factor or go to something a little bigger so that I can do SLI. You know, maybe SLI 970s or something, so that I can drive something 4K at a decent frame rate. So we will see what happens later in the year.
How about you, Emperor Joe?
That's a thumbs up.
Yeah, we gathered that.
Thumbs up because it definitely makes competitors for it. You'll eventually be able to get these TVs at a cheaper price eventually because of competition like this. So. Thumbs up because competition's good.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of excited about this because I'm currently rocking a Vizio. I have a 42-inch 1080p set I bought about 7 or 8 years ago now, and we have been considering an upgrade within the next few years. And $600 is like half what I paid for the TV I have now, so that's a really compelling sale for me.
Yeah, when we got to Seattle, we didn't bring our TV with us. We had a Vizio 42-inch 1080, which was kind of on the fritz. But so when we got here, we bought an $800 60-inch 1080p Sharp, which is a beautiful TV, and I really like it. But, you know, I wouldn't feel bad about, you know, selling that secondhand to pick up a 4K TV. But for me, I'm more interested in the computer side of it than I am the TV side of it, because there's still a long way from a lot of 4K content.
Right. I kind of idly wonder, when are we going to see 4K console hardware? Because that'll be the killer app right there.
Well, I'll bet you right now that once 4K started getting popular, the console guys started scrambling on. Because, I mean, you can't tell me they're not already developing the next platform, right? I mean,
of course.
So I'm sure that, you know, all of a sudden all the video plans kind of stopped and they're going to reassess that a little bit and try to decide if it's worth going there. You know, game developers seem to be embracing 4K, which is good. We like that. You know, Star Citizen, they're saying 4K and beyond. And 8K. I think GTA, yeah, right, 8K. I think even Grand Theft Auto supports 4K, right?
That's part of the reason why it takes so god-awful long to download if you don't have.
No, it doesn't. Only takes about an hour and a half.
Shut the fuck up.
I probably could have downloaded it for you and mailed you the DVDs faster than, never mind. So, So yeah, I'm really interested in this. As soon as these things hit the market, they're going to disappear like hotcakes. And as soon as I start seeing reviews, then I'll get in line if they're decent. That'll be my Christmas gift to myself.
Man, you're a better Santa Claus than I am.
So speaking of next gen consoles, so the PlayStation would be the PlayStation 5. Would the Xbox turn into the Xbox 2?
Oh, who knows? Once these once the marketing people get a hold of these things, you don't know what's going to happen. Next up in the Coliseum, we've got the Department of Education researching ways to use video games as a more engaging educational tool, citing games like Assassin's Creed, which take great pains to be at least somewhat historically accurate. Educators hope to use a new annual Games for Learning Summit to bring teachers, students, scientists, and game developers together to find new ways to use the video game medium for teaching. It's estimated that the average American student spends 10,000 hours playing video games by the time they graduate from high school. Making even a small percentage of those hours educational in some way can enhance their overall knowledge of various subjects, as well as inspire students to pursue self-directed learning they otherwise would never bother with. I read an article on Medium a few weeks ago by a guy named Mac Blauner. We'll go ahead and link it in the show notes. But the name of the article was Video Gaming Made Me a History Major. And he talked about how a whole bunch of the war games, like the Total War series, got him interested in historical battles. And then he would go and look those up and became enamored with history, particularly the history of war, and now he is a historian because of video games. And it's interesting that the Department of Education is kind of wising up to that self-directed learning tendency that people can have if they're properly inspired. What do you think about this, Emperor Joe?
I think it's a thumbs up, because so if the school system can actually find games, or if publishers started making games strictly for school, you know, criteria, then it would be really interesting to see, you know, your history class, you're playing a game that's very historically accurate. I wouldn't say Assassin's Creed is the most historically accurate game just because of the premise of the entire thing. But if they could make games interesting and educational just for school systems, then summer projects will be a lot more interesting, I think.
Instead of a reading list, you've got a gameplay list?
Yeah, beat this game and then write a report on it. Instead of read this book and then write a report on it.
Would you write a report on Assassin's Creed, Emperor Todd?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
So it's an interesting topic. I think the article kind of went a little bit of a different direction than I would have. I can't imagine Assassin's Creed as being an educational game, but I understand how it goes back in certain times of history. And if it's, you know, if it's accurate, then some osmosis might take place and some bro dude might actually learn something. I doubt it, because they're idiots. But there's a different aspect that I would have kind of gone with this, and I know I harp on Minecraft a lot, but Dan 200, or Daniel Radcliffe, believe it or not, that's actually his name, is the developer of a Minecraft mod called Computercraft, and he's doing this whole thing with schools and with Mojang, where schools can get Minecraft for free, and he works with educators to build a kind of like a curriculum around computer programming using Minecraft as the medium. And it's kind of like a Lua based operating system that he has in Minecraft, and you can control servos and pistons and, you know, lights and all this kind of stuff, and displays, you know, like little monitors inside the game, all that kind of crap. And so kids feel like they're playing a game, but at the same time they're learning to program in Lua. And educators are just eating this shit up, and he's doing a lot to support it. And I think that's, you know, really great. So that's my two cents on that. I think that's actually useful. I think Assassin's Creed as a learning tool is kind of weird, but I think Computercraft and Minecraft as a learning tool is very useful.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. That's really good.
Yeah, I knew about Computercraft, but I didn't know that they were actually getting into the .edu space. That's kind of awesome to hear.
Yeah, there's a name for the program, and I've was starting to search for it, and I wanted to stop typing while I was actually talking. So we'll see if we can find out some information on that and put some links in the show notes.
Hot on the heels of Harmonix's announcement that Plastic Instruments would be returning to all of our living rooms soon in Rock Band 4, Activision announced this week that they're reviving the Guitar Hero franchise with Guitar Hero Live. The game will come with a new, more complex guitar controller and a live-action recorded crowd that responds in real time to your performances. With a new controller, new gameplay, and a promised new online experience, Activision seems to have learned that they can't just saturate the market with cookie-cutter Guitar Hero releases every year. How do you feel about this, Emperor Todd?
Well, fucking duh. I don't know. I'm not sure that Rock Band can make a comeback. A friend of mine, Ethan, who I don't think he listens, sometimes he does, is actually playing the other game that actually teaches you to play a guitar at the same time. And I'd be damned if I can remember the name of it.
Rocksmith?
Is it Rocksmith? And he's really enjoying that. And he said, I can never go back to, you know, playing on the plastic guitar after I can do this on a real guitar. And I'm actually sort of learning something. But, you know, maybe that's just because we're both older, late 30s. And different things are important to us, you know, as we approach the other side of the mountain. It's hard to say. But, I don't know. I feel people have burned out on the Rock Band thing. But, you know, Joe's a Rock Band savant. Me, it makes my eyes go crossed. But I know you played it a lot, Dwayne. So maybe I'm a bad judge on this one.
How about you, Emperor Joe?
Well, what Todd said kind of reminded me, or it kind of references back to the education with games, where you can learn to play a guitar through a game. But, thumbs up that they're trying to do something else besides their normal cookie-cutter builds, I guess. But, yeah, I think other games have made a lot more leaps and bounds toward making a unique experience, so I don't know if a plastic controller really meets up to the standards that other games have been meeting. So, yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens when both of these games hit shelves, probably sometime in 2016. But that's it for the Colosseum, and I think that's it for the show this week. So thank you guys, and thanks everybody for tuning in. HammerGaming.com/HammerCast/11 has all the links for this show. At Hammer Gaming is where you can find us on Twitter. Follow us and you can get updates on when new episodes are available, as well as other news from the Hammer Gaming community. You can follow Todd on Twitter at Dregger, that's DREGG0R. Joe is over at DazikLP, and I'm Valthonis on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, bye everyone. Everybody. Fuck off and thumbs down.
Don't thumbs down.
Oh, wait. No, thumbs up. Yeah, you like us.
Thumbs up. Retweet. Fuck. Retweet.
Fuck follow. Off and thumbs up?
Fuck off and thumbs
fuck
up.
Fuck on and thumbs up.
Fuck on. Well,
and thumbs up.
Fucking on is definitely a thumbs up.
There you go. Fuck on and thumbs up.
You have to
we now that. Use them both.
Yeah. All right. What the hell was that? Okay. Good show, guys, I think.
Fuck on and thumbs up.
Fuck on and thumbs up. What?
Exactly. It's awesome. It sticks in your head. You're going to be saying that shit away. All night.
It won't go away. Make it stop.
Fuck on, everybody. Thumbs up.
Fuck on, everyone.
What time is it? 2:30.
We need that on a t-shirt.
Fuck on, everyone.
Fuck on, everybody. Keep calm and fuck on.
Yeah, Phil would punch me in the face. He's so sick of those keep calm things. Every time he sees one, he just growls under his breath. Yeah.
You have to send it to him now.